no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a
officer. It's supposed to be an
idea. How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging, mostly because there's no grass on the golf course, but there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag, and I have high hopes for the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
What is happening, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. This is episode 74. I'm your host, Alex Dixon. On today's show, we've got longtime Langley High School golf coach, Al Berg. Coach Berg is retiring after this season, after 27 seasons leading the Langley golf team here in McLean, Virginia. And he is on a current run of seven straight Virginia State Class 6 golf championships. So Coach Berg will be retiring after next week's state tournament, where his team is vying for an eighth consecutive state championship, which is a remarkable run. Coach Berg has a lot of personality. He's got a lot of stories. Spent some time with him during his district tournament, then rode around with him and saw kind of how he coached. And we sat down and got to hear kind of about his journey as the coach. And he reflected on some players, on some stories, some anecdotes, some of his opinions on high school golf. And it was a lot of fun. It was really great to get to know Coach Berg a little bit. And I hope they bring home their eighth straight title here next week. This is coming out before the state tournament. They just won their regional tournament, which is kind of the second round of their playoffs out at Bristow Manor. And so in a week or so, we'll know if he's won his 10th overall state title in 27 seasons at Langley High School. So a lot of fun to meet Coach Berg. Hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. Coming up, by the time this comes out, we've only got about a week or so left of signups for the Silver Dollar Shootout Beltway Golfer event at Mount Vernon Country Club on October 23rd. Still got 10 or 15 spots available. Trying to sell this thing out. If you're listening to this and you're wondering about whether this event is for you, it's for everybody. We got handicaps of all ranges signing up for this event. We've got a competition. It's a two-person better ball, but it's going to be casual. It's not the most serious competition. Some people are going to be taking it more serious than others. We are giving out prizes for both net and gross, but there's going to be giveaways. There's going to be breakfast. There's going to be snacks. There's going to be a huge barbecue buffet after the event. We're going to have a golf auction where we've got all kind of foursomes being auctioned off. We've got memorabilia being auctioned off at the event, raising money for the MS Society, which funds research for multiple sclerosis, which is a very important cause for myself and my family. Anyway, it's going to be a fun day. I encourage anybody who's listening to this or anybody who's on the fence to sign up. Get any questions, reach out, but sign up. Monday, October 23rd, the Silver Dollar Shootout at Mount Vernon Country Club in Alexandria, Virginia. For more information or to sign up, go to beltwaygolfer.com. Click on Outings or the Silver Dollar Shootout. It's going to be fun. Sponsoring this podcast is Union Green. They've been our sponsor for a while now. We've been playing the Union Green golf ball for a while and enjoying it. I've been playing their pin drop golf ball for a while now, which, you know, it's an inexpensive golf ball. It gives you everything you need. High trajectory, long, grabs the green. I love it. No complaints. And I've been using it for a while, and I actually played Bristow Manor about a month ago, shot my low round of the year using the pin drop. So I'm a fan, and they sponsor this podcast. So go to uniongreen.com. They've got specials on their website. Buy any two pieces of apparel, get a free dozen of their T-Bird golf ball, which is their distance ball. And you can enter Beltway Golfer 20 at checkout to get 20% off whatever you order at uniongreen.com. Their whole message and vibe we can get behind. It's all about playing local golf, playing municipal golf. We are public golfers here at Beltway Golfer. I'm a public golfer. I know I'm hosting an event at a country club, but I'm not a country club member. Our events are more to give public golfers the opportunity to play some private courses around the DC area because there's so many of them. But Union Green's great sponsor. You can also find them on social media at Golf Union Green is their handle at most of the different social media platforms. Check them out, uniongreen.com. By supporting Union Green, you're supporting this podcast. Again, Beltway Golfer 20 at checkout will save you 20%. We'll get to the podcast. I'm recording this intro on Friday morning of the Ryder Cup. So as I'm recording this, the U.S. is down 4-0 in the Ryder Cup. We'll see how that shakes out by the time this gets posted. But cheering along, did not wake up at 1:30 in the morning to watch session one, but maybe we'll do that for Saturday. We'll see. Or just stay up. I don't know. But excited for the Ryder Cup. Wish it was longer. It's only 3 days. Don't think it'll ever move to four, but yeah, the Ryder Cup, so much build up for it, and it goes by seemingly in a blink of an eye. Anyway, hey, let's get to the conversation with Coach Berg, and best of luck to him at the state tournament down in Harrisonburg next week. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Episode 74, Coach Al Berg of the Langley High School Saxons. Enjoy.
So we had a fun time at Herndon. I got to ride around with you and see how you coach mid-round a little bit in round one. But let me ask, so yesterday was round two of the, I don't even know, how do you refer to it? The Liberty District playoffs?
Liberty District Tournament.
Liberty District Tournament. So how did yesterday go? How did round two go?
It went fine. We ended up winning by 32
shots. That on paper, that sounds like an awful lot. I mean, is that kind of at this tournament?
We've done pretty well at the district tournament. I can't remember. We really had a close one. One year we won by 68 shots, we had everybody in the 70s yesterday. We had one of the subs came in and shot 75. So, we did pretty good. You know, it was pretty solid playing. It was beautiful weather. Couldn't ask for two nicer days.
It has been. It's been a beautiful week here in the DC area. So I got a quick question. My questions might be all over the map, but when you win, like you just yesterday, you won by 32 strokes and you won, you know, you just mentioned by 60 something before, you know, it's high school golf. It's public high school golf, but is there any, you know, animosity is not the right word, but from other programs and other coaches when they're getting, you know, when you're winning by that much?
You know, one of the most gratifying parts of my tenure at Langley is that typically I've heard more than one coach say, you know, if we didn't win, we're glad that you guys did. Our kids have traditionally been very, very sociable with the other players. The kids kind of know each other. They play in tournaments. So they're friends to a great degree. And the coaches, every single one of them this year and in past years, there's a real camaraderie there. And they know, you know, we do have an advantage in the sense that our community, golf is not particularly cheap. You know, and so, you know, we have kids that are able to, you know, to get lessons and go to tournaments, and a lot of them belong to a club, which is a big advantage. So, but, you know, I think that probably the teams or the coaches that don't have any contact with us might have those feelings. But once the teams in the area and the coaches in the area, They've been fine.
Yeah. And a lot of these guys, I saw some of that firsthand. I saw you chatting it up with the Yorktown coach and I think the Washington Lee coach maybe. But, you know, everyone seemed to really get along. The Yorktown coach said he's been coaching over there for 17 years. You've been at Langley for 27 years, which we're going to talk a lot about. But I saw there was even some, you know, talk of, you know, writing recommendation letters for even players on other teams when they try to go to college.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that.
I've always done that. And I think, I found that it seems to help when you get a coach that is not their coach writing a letter. It seems to carry a little bit more. It's a little bit more objective, I guess, in terms of the recipient. So yeah, I've done that many times.
So 27 years That's a long time to be a coach. And this is your last year doing it. But so that means your first year coaching at Langley was
96.
And were you a teacher for some time at the school?
I was a teacher at Cooper Middle School, which feeds into Langley, which in a way was kind of a nice advantage to have because I was able to kind of get a feel for some kids that were in the seventh and eighth grade that were potential golfers. So I'd start working on them.
So how did you end up being the high school golf coach if you were a teacher at the middle school?
Well, I ended up actually played a round of golf. I had a friend who, a fellow teacher at Cooper, who was good friends with the baseball golf coach at Langley. And we ended up playing a round of golf, and I played pretty well. Won a few quarters off of him, the coach at Langley. And he was, I think his emphasis was baseball. And I think he was ready to kind of look for an out there. So I got a phone call from Langley, say, hey, are you interested in the job? You've been recommended by the baseball coach. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. So I, you know, went over there. He says, I love golf, and play golf all my life. I'll be glad to do it.
Interesting. So you didn't have any experience coaching at that time?
No, you know, I've had some sports experience in, kind of coaching. I think I'm the only recipient of the Intramural Athlete of the Year at George Mason University. They actually gave me, it's a plaque on the wall, but I didn't just play. I kind of ran the teams that I was on. I played Industrial League softball, and I was the player manager for the softball team. And I really got into the idea of trying to maximize what you have. So we won three straight Industrial League championships in the softball league, and I just really enjoyed being able to get the most out of a team.
Well, yeah. Well, it sounds like your personality. So you join. Was there much of a program? Yeah. What was the Langley Golf program? How were they doing before you joined?
They'd had some success. They'd had some success in the mid '80s. I think they either won back to back championships, or they won two out of three back in the mid '80s. But they'd really hadn't done very much since that time. Looking back now, I realized that there was talent there. I just don't know if there were expectations. I ran into one of my old players from the first year, and he said, coach, we weren't very good back then. I said, I disagree with you. I think we were good. We just didn't know it. And we played like we didn't know it. And I didn't know it either. But I think looking back, I think knowing what I know now, I think I could have gotten those couple early years a little bit better because we had some talent, but we started winning pretty quickly. I only had one losing season. That was my first season. That was it.
And you got good quick because your first state championship was, do I have it right? 2001. You were wearing that state championship.
Right.
Hat the other
right.
Day.
Yeah.
So that only took you a few years. So do you remember like was it your recruiting or what do you think got
quick? I tell you what, I had some really motivated kids. I have to say I had one young fellow who was a real key for us winning states. And in his sophomore year, he was probably one of the last players on the team. And he came up to me and said, coach, what do I need to do to start next year? And I gave him a few tips, a few things that he needed to work on. Well, this is all on him. He went from being one of the last players on my team to Washington Post All Met in 1 year. Chris Fenimore.
Do you remember how he did that? Like, how did he pull that off?
He had a lot of kids have physical ability, but being able to understand what you need to do to get really good, it's not all the kids get it. And it's not a matter of, not being lazy or anything like that. It's just hard to appreciate how much those top players devote to the game. I tell the kids the most important part of our season is what they do after October and before I see them in August. You know, during that time, that's the longest stretch. I don't have any contact with them really during that whole stretch. So they've got to motivate themselves. And unlike a lot of other sports, especially nowadays, which when you have year-round sports, on Saturday or Sunday, you're sitting there on the sofa watching football games, and you're not going to get a practice from your AAU basketball team. You got to get yourself off the sofa. You got to go out there and practice. I remember I played a round of golf at Pleasant Valley, I think it was. This is a number of years ago, and there was this young gal in the sand hitting sand shots in the practice area. Played 18 holes, and she was still in there hitting the sand shots. This is 4 hours later. It was Jenny Sue, who played a few, had some experience on the LPGA Tour, had great college career, and she won the state championship. But that was a real eye-opener in terms of how much dedication a player had. I've had, a number of players who I can't tell you how hard they worked on their game. And this is on them, I think they enjoyed, being on the championship and winning championships. And, but I think also just the self-motivation, because in golf, you really have to do that. The only time you're a member of a team is when you're playing for me. Otherwise it's all individual.
But to your point, and that season with you is only a few months long, and there's not
2 months, 9 other months really, here. 2 months. 2 months, yeah.
Interesting.
2 months.
So that anecdote about Jenny Sue, now Jenny Sue Thompson, she was actually on this podcast last year before she competed in the KPMG Championship at Congressional.
Great young lady.
Was that anecdote from when she was in high school or more recently?
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. Four hours in a bunker. That's how you become good. That's one way anyway. So you just mentioned your player that went from last on your team to all met in 1 year. I started pulling up. Washington Post has some of their historical all mets. I didn't go all the way back, but I just started clicking on some of the more recent years, and it seems like there's a member of Langley on the all met team just about every year. Do you keep track of that sort of thing? Like, how many players of yours, ballpark, do you think have made all met?
Well, we've had a number of players, but the one this has happened two or three times, where the Washington Post would call me up and say, pick one of your, we got two or three players in contention, pick one. And I said, I cannot do that. I'm not going to do that. He says, I can't. So actually, 1 year I was able to get two players. I've had a number of years where I had two players on the all-met team, which is unusual because I totally get this. They like to spread it out. They don't want to, it's not a big team. Usually they have anywhere from six to eight on the first team all met. So they kind of shy away from picking two from the same school. But some years I said, look, we've had two great players here, and they played lights out golf all year. I remember Eli and Kelly Chin both made all met together.
That was just a few years ago. So Kelly Chin is playing at Duke, and correct, Eli Thrasher, who actually who played at Dartmouth. But he's a kid that it was funny. He's been a follower of Beltway Golfer because I actually played a round of golf with Eli. I think it was before he was in high school. I randomly got paired up with him and his dad. He might have just been starting out at Langley, or maybe he was in middle school, but it was on the East Potomac White Course. This was years ago. And I was just starting. I was just starting the Beltway Golfer, and I told him about it. He's followed ever since. And so he actually reached out to me a couple weeks ago. And so he sent me over a couple of anecdotes, and I didn't even realize that he was first team all met.
Yeah. He was, the really special thing about Eli, if I had to pick one thing, it was that in terms of the golf is that he most golfers, unless you're at the really elite level, most golfers, if they get a really good round going, they will talk themselves out of it. There's a little voice inside you. You're not really this good, and you screw up coming in. You're 200 par after 12 holes, and you end up shooting a 78. But Eli, when he got low, he just kept going lower. My favorite Eli story was we were playing in the regional tournament, and Eli shot 69 the first day. And our big nemesis was Chantilly. And I remember before we teed off on the next round, I remember the Chantilly coach saying to his team, I overheard him saying, he said, "Hey, we still got these guys. There's no way Eli's going to shoot another 69 today." He didn't. He shot 64.
Do you remember what course that was?
Yeah, that was, out near Battlefield. What's the course out there?
Bull Run?
No, not Bull Run.
Evergreen.
Gosh. Huh? Dominion Valley.
Dominion Valley. Okay, yep.
Dominion Valley. And he had another round in the mid 60s out at Fawn Lake. That crew that year with Eli and Matthew Feinstein and Nikita, they were just a fun bunch. They were really fun.
And so you had a couple players. We already mentioned Kelly Chin at Duke. You have a couple players playing college right now, at least. I'm sure you've got
Chase Nevins has started at Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt's really loaded. You know, they got a really, really good team. I got Pierce Hawkinson, who actually came out to watch us yesterday. Pierce is over at George Mason, along with Nikita. So I got two players at George Mason. And let's see, who else is playing?
Well, right, and their coach, George Mason, just won the Mid-Atlantic PGA Sectional Championship just yesterday.
He's a good player. And he's really motivated to have a good, you know, to get that program going. So, yeah, it's nice to see that.
Do you develop a relationship with their coaches at that next level?
You know, I still mostly with the players, like Brandon Berry. I was, you know, talked to him recently. I talked to Brandon fairly frequently. He's trying out for the tour. And he's, you know, right now he's undergoing that Monday qualifying, which he, you know, shoots 7 under par and he doesn't get in. So it's pretty crazy. Cutthroat. But he's an excellent player. I think he finished second or third in the Virginia Open last year, this past year. He's a really, really good player. But, you know, the George Mason coach for sure. But a lot of these college coaches, you know, they change. There's a lot of turnover with them. And the one thing I find, you know, because the parents, you know, a lot of the coaches and the parents and the kids want to know about the college. And I said, look, it's really each program is so different in college. You know, some schools have a 15-man team. Other schools, they narrow it down to 6 or 7. And you got to have to find out who's, you know, how many seniors a school's got that are leaving. And that, so, you know, it can really, the accessibility to get into a college on a college team can vary so much from year to year because the team is so small compared to like football.
I wasn't the big time golfer by any stretch in high school. So I certainly wasn't recruited. I only played 1 year of high school golf myself, but I was in that world a little bit in basketball, but I'm curious when the college recruiting with like, when do coaches start reaching out to you about players? Like at what stage in their career?
Well, you know, I think there's kind of two categories. One is the Kelly Chin and the Chase Nevins, where they've played AJGA tournaments and actually won some AJGA events, which are, you know, national thing. So they're recruited. You know, the coaches are after them. But the one thing that I find is a little frustrating is that you have a lot of kids in golf who are late bloomers. And I think that sometimes the colleges miss out on them because they don't have a huge resume. A lot of times they've played another sport for most of their career. And they shift over to golf and they go from being basically a recreational golfer to shooting in the mid 70s and they got an immense potential in the right program, the kid could end up being, you know, a lot of people ask me about who was the best player I ever coached. And of course, you know, Kelly and Chase and those guys are right up there, but there was another one, and for a long time, when they asked me who was the best player I ever coached, and my answer was, "Well, you mean eventually or when I had him?" And the reason is because I had a player back early on. It was first year's coaching, and he was a basketball player and played golf and had a decent stroke. But, he never broke 40 in a single match. He typically hit 7 greens and 3 putt a couple greens. And in his senior year, his uncle calls me up and tells me that he's thinking of not going to college, that he wants to become a professional golfer. And he asked me what I thought. And I said, well, I'm going to give you my honest opinion. He's really got a solid swing. If he devotes everything into it, I can tell you that he can get to scratch. But scratch doesn't get you anything in terms of pro level. Beyond that, it's all guesswork. You never know. So anyways, the kid doesn't go to college. Within 2 years, he's breaking course records.
Wow.
He actually was on the mini tour for a while. Couldn't quite make it into the big show. Regained his amateur status. Won the Texas Amateur. Was one of the top amateurs in the country. And after he turned pro, when he realized he wasn't going to make the big show, he regained his amateur status. I think it takes a year or two. So he was a very, very good player. And I kept him kind of in contact with him. And then surprisingly, he moved here to Richmond and joined Kinloch. I don't know if you're familiar with Kinloch, but sure. It's a pretty exclusive club. And really, probably the most prestigious club in the area. First 2 years up there, he wins the club championship. You know, no problem at all. And unfortunately, he had a serious illness and passed away at a very young age.
Oh wow!
But he became a great player, and there was nothing in his high school career that would have indicated that.
Did you? If I missed it, did you mention what was that gentleman's name?
Mike Minicucci.
Mike Minicucci.
Yeah.
So I understand you also have so it sounds like Mike was also a basketball player and played multiple sports. You know, a hot topic in youth sports over the last 5-10 years is all this specialization and you mentioned earlier playing one sport year round. But I understand that you have some strong opinions on that.
Well, you know, I've always had players who played other sports. Eli, we talked about Eli. He actually didn't just play three sports. He actually was a starter on three varsity teams, which was really extraordinary. One of the things that I think makes it more difficult at Langley is these kids are they take pretty demanding academic schedules. You know, a lot of them take 3 or 4 AP classes. So it is kind of hard to spread out. You really have to be very disciplined to be able to do that. But it seems like the whole country is turning to much more specialization. Even, I mean, they're starting really, really young. You know, when I was a kid, you played all the sports. You know, you might not have played at the varsity level, but you played all the sports. These kids are you know, to be able, you know, you got – they're competing against kids who are playing all year round. And but at the same time, I point out, you know, this is one of the things I point out to the kids when they're looking at a college is how many great players came from states that weren't particularly – they weren't Florida or California. There's a lot of players who came from some pretty states where you had a relatively short golf season and you didn't have any season at all in the winter. You know, Jack Nicklaus was from Ohio. You know, Arnie was from Pennsylvania. You know, those aren't exactly places where you're going to be basking in the sun there in the middle of, in February, you know.
Right, right.
I got a good example right now. I had a young lady on the team, Catherine, who finished second in the district tournament. And she really focused on crew a lot for 2 years. She was always a good player, always a good golfer, but came out her senior year and she really decided that she wanted to focus on golf and possibly play golf in college. And she's 20 yards longer and she wasn't short. She was not short off the tee before. I mean, she's 20 yards longer now. And I think it's, you know, doing crew had really, her core is so much stronger.
Sure.
And she just, she hits the ball a country mile. But yeah, I think it's great for the kids to play more than one sport. And I think it's that crew that we had with Eli, and those guys all played. If they didn't play varsity basketball, they all played recreation basketball. They always, you know, they were playing other sports too. And yeah. I think that's I hate to see the kid. A lot of kids get burned out. A lot of kids get burned out. They start so early and they play, you know, they play so much. And at some point they just kind of like, I think it burns them out a little bit. And I think having a little break in the season there gives them a chance to recharge your energy. One of the things I stress to them though, and this is important, our season's over in early October. When spring comes, especially we're talking about late spring, like April or May, you don't want to spend 2 months trying to get back to where you were in October. Sure. You want to be able to pick up and keep improving. Yeah. So, just an hour and a half per week where you're working on some aspect of your game so that when you come back in the spring, you're kind of picking up where you left off rather than having to make up for some lost time, you know. Yeah. And I think the kids take that to heart, you know.
I can imagine. I can also say, I mean, your point about even like Eli playing three sports, starting in all three, and he was an all met, but your earlier and a brilliant student.
A brilliant student going to Dartmouth, you know, and yeah.
But your earlier point about, you know, how some people talk themselves out of a good round and he had that mentality of just going low. I mean, a lot of that I think you get when you play other sports, because there's things you can, you know, if you're playing basketball or football or baseball or whatever you're playing beyond golf or beyond whatever sport that you want to specialize in or what you want to focus in, there's so many things you can take, whether it's physically or mentally, from other sports that are so different than that one that you can apply.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
So another thing that makes so 27 years, and we didn't do the recap. So you won the championship in 2001, but right now you're on a run of seven straight Virginia Classics state championships. But at some point here, you moved to Richmond. When did that happen?
Yeah, that was 2010. I retired from teaching, and my daughter lives down here in Richmond. And you know, Northern Virginia is pretty hectic up there. And so I and my mom was down here too. So down here in Richmond. So we had a really good team coming back, and I said, you know, I really think this team could win the state championship, and I'll be darned if I'm going to miss that. So let's see how commuting this 1 year is going to work, you know. And I did, and we did win the state championship. And then I said, you know, I guess I can do this, you know, for a while. It's, you know, so my sister and her husband live up in Northern Virginia, and I have a good, really good friend in Reston, who used to be my neighbor when I lived in Reston. So he and his wife are been incredibly accommodating. So I'll come up, you know, and crash in their house or crash with my sister. But I will say this, 95 has gotten worse. It's even worse. So the last couple of trips have been 3 hours, 3 hours. It's like, it's torture. I'll be honest with you. If I still lived in Northern Virginia, I think they'd have to carry me out on a stretcher. I wouldn't quit. But the 3 hours on 95 is just unbearable.
Yeah. And you had mentioned to me when we were chatting that, you know, you kept telling yourself when you see the construction on 95 that as soon as this is done, yeah, you know, this traffic's going to go away. And it just never seems the construction's always there. So how do you estimate, like, it's so if the season is, you know, two and a half months long, like how many times are you making that trip?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. But, you know, I make sure that I let people know that I don't go back and forth every day. You know, I'll come up for, you know, and I will say this, that I found interesting is especially with the kids who are starting or competing for starting spots is the number of practices that I have. It's not as important as them understanding what they need to do. And I'll kind of map out each kid, their needs are very different. But one of the universals is most kids have really mediocre short games compared to how they hit the ball. And I just hammer into them how if they won 70s is by having a decent short game. Plus the fact you can hit the ball. I mean, I got kids who can hit the ball 300 yards, but they have a mediocre short game. Now, I am very understanding of the fact that most of us play the game, got the kick out of golf, because when we started playing golf and we caught one with a driver, we actually hit the ball further than Babe Ruth ever hit a baseball. That's a thrill to see that ball just go out there into the horizon. That's what the kick is in golf. It's not chipping and putting, you know, but it's a reality thing. Look, if you want to get good, you just gotta be able to save par when you miss the green. I was with the Washington Post writer yesterday. We were behind this par three that's uphill. And of course all the kids are short because they're all one of the things that I think in a way has kind of hurt the kids a little bit is the rangefinder. I think rangefinders are very useful, but the kids get up, you know, they're so into the technology now and everything, and they get obsessed over the number, not really considering how many other factors are involved and how, in what club you use or how far the shot really is. So they'll get a number to the flag, but the green could, you can't use slope on your rangefinder.
Right.
So it seems like they don't realize that if the green's on a rise, you're going to have to use more club. They just go by the number on the rangefinder. The other one that kills me, and I got on one of my kids yesterday. He's 40 yards away from the green, and he's got his rangefinder out, and he's looking through his rangefinder, and he's 40 yards from the pin, and of course he hits it over the green, because his rangefinder told him how much was to the pin. Well, the pin's in the back. So I you know, called him over and I said, Shotke, it was the kid's name. And I said, what did your rangefinder tell you? Because it looked to me like you had about 38 yards. And he said, it's 40 yards, coach. And I said, so what did you do with that number? What does that number mean to you in terms of how you hit the ball? He couldn't give me a good answer. And he says, it's a feel shot. You got to look at the pin. There's trouble behind. You got plenty of green in front. You got to think about all these things. Forget that rangefinder from 40 yards. But you got kids, they'll be 20. I was telling another coach this, and he told me he's got a kid on the team. He uses his rangefinder on the green.
What? That's crazy.
I said, come on. And I said, you know, Ben Hogan didn't have a rangefinder. Now I got no problem with knowing the distance in yards, but you got all these other factors to consider.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, course management is going to be a biggie at regionals, because Bristol Manor is a course where you really have to, be smart how you play out there, because there's a lot of trouble.
So you've won, you were telling me yesterday, so you've won 8 total state championships, 7 in a row.
9. We've won 9.
My team's won 9. I apologize for shorting you on there. But do I have it right? You've 7 in a row right now?
Correct. Yeah.
So you told me how it got a little bit easier when they changed from 3 divisions in the state to 6, which – makes it a little bit easier that there's, you know, you're playing, you know, there's 6 different titles with 6 different divisions versus 3.
Yeah.
However, 7 in a row is still 7 in a row. It's still, that is incredibly impressive. A couple questions. One, just to give people that might be listening to this some perspective, do you have ballpark, like how many class 6 schools in golf are there around the state? I mean, are we talking about 20? Are we talking about 100? Like,
oh no, I'd say probably between 50 and 100.
Okay. So again, 7 championship in a row. This is your last season. We're pulling for number 8 here in a row, 10 overall. what's your secret? You know, some people listening might listen and say, well, you know, Langley's in an area, it's an affluent area. You get some kids that probably play golf, might belong to clubs. But quite frankly, there's probably a lot of other Class 6 schools that are similar. So what's your secret?
Well, you know, one of the things when I look at the talent of this year's team compared to like the first year when I coached, we had a losing record, and I don't see a huge difference in the talent. But what I do see is a very, very different attitude of, or expectations, you know, and it really, it seems to have an effect. And I don't know how you would analyze this psychologically, but you know, we're not overconfident, but we're confident in the sense that our play is. I think the kids are used to pressure. You know, most of them have. The nice thing about high school golf is, you know, you got seniors who have been here for 3 or 4 years, and you got the young guys, and they see how the seniors are. So it kind of feeds on itself. And, you know, now I will say this, in terms of, obviously, it's been a fantastic experience, but I get, in terms of gratification, my gratification comes from a team doing as fulfilling its potential. And one of my favorite teams of all time in terms of that was we never went to states. I had a team of that was led by 4 seniors, none of whom ever shot in the 70s when they came, you know, when they were ninth grade. I think 2 of them were basically beginner golfers, and they all became very good golfers. And I'm really good at pretty handicapping our team in terms of the rest of the field. And if somebody had told me at the beginning of the season what would be the absolute best you could hope for from this team, I said, I think if we finished 3rd in the region, that would be the most I could hope for. And that's where they finished, 3rd in the region. We never went to states that year, but that team, they all shot in the 70s at the regional tournament and at the district tournament. It was just very, very gratifying. And 3 of them went on to play college golf. So, you know, that was just a really fun year.
There's a psychology to your expectations, you know.
It's absolutely true. And the kids are, you know, I really see the kids as being pretty calm, considering how much pressure golf is. You know, they have a certain calmness about them that I think, if it was like, oh, this is the first year they made it to states, it was like, ah, oh, you know. So I remember the first year that we've got on this streak, we were in 4th place at the regional tournament after the first day. 4th place.
Yeah.
Only the top 2 teams go. You know, I didn't give them any kind of a rousing talk, but I told them, I says, guys, you know, this is your season right here, and you're perfectly capable of getting into that top 2. And they played lights out. We didn't quite win regionals, but we got to 2nd place. We went down to states and won states by 25 shots.
But there must also be and you mentioned this to me when we were driving around yesterday or on Tuesday, you know, like Duke basketball or Alabama football, when you start to build that program and there's expectations. And, you know, those are colleges where it's really just, you know, recruiting and people committing because they want to be part of a winning program. But you're a public high school. And so, you know, you mentioned there's even been 1 or 2 cases where people tried to move into your district just to be a part of the program because you have this kind of winning.
It happens. You know, I went to Annandale High School back in the turn of the century, the last century, not this one. And I remember Annandale High School was where if you were a military family and you had a kid who played football, you moved into Annandale's area. And Annandale, they had a 4-year run at Annandale without losing a single football game. And it was all, you know, the transient military families moving in. So yeah, we'll get a family moving in that, you know, has looked ahead. You know, kid's a good golfer, and they say, okay, where do they seem to have some success here? And it actually, you know, it seems there's a factor there. It's not quite as transient as it used to be, but it's still, you know, Great Falls is it's not something. It's a big move to Great Falls from most other places.
I'd love for you to share. You had a couple of funny anecdotes. I got the opportunity again driving around with you in round one of the districts at Herndon to kind of see a little bit of your style of how you coach mid tournament or mid round. And there was a couple of interesting things, including one, you said how you never asked their score. So a lot of times, and there's not scoreboards everywhere. This isn't the PGA. So a lot of times you have no idea really how your team's doing until they turn the scorecards in.
It's true. In fact, if I remember one of the, when we had our end of the year banquet, when we won states in 2000, maybe it was the year before that. But one of the things that the team gave me was a caricature of me hiding behind a tree, peeking around, because I didn't want them to think they'd be worried about me looking at them. But going back to what the thing I was talking about, Eli, if a kid's got a good round going, I mean, they get, you know, I told them that my ideal for you is if I drive up in my cart and I see you walking down the fairway, I don't want to be able to tell whether you're 3 under par or 5 over par by your body language. You know, that you, because your body language should be try to exactly. I remember John Wooden, the great basketball coach of UCLA, you know, he that was one of the things he stressed was, you know, don't get, you know, really high or really low, you know, your focus is on your next shot. And when you're in team golf, you never, ever know whether your score is going to be one that counts or not. Sure. I tell them the story about Deep Run winning a state championship that about 20 years ago. And on the second day, it was windy and cold, and Deep Run did not have a kid break 80, and they won the state championship. So, you know, some days you need to, you know, the number is just the number. It's relative to what everybody else is shooting. I was talking to Pierce yesterday, who's at George Mason, and they play one of their tryout rounds to see who's going to play in the tournament at Creighton Farms. And he was telling me how hard that course is. And he said, nobody breaks 75 on that course. Nobody shoots better than 75 on that course. It's just so hard. I said, well, that, you know, that's your expectations. You know, they're looking at a number, but the number can vary depending on the conditions and the course you're playing.
You told me an interesting anecdote about, and this kind of goes to your point of, you know, coaching golf is so much different than basketball or football or baseball, where there's so much in-game coaching and yelling at your players and timeouts and everything like that. But you, I forget the kid's name. But he was in the state tournament, I think, and you had he shot a 9 and an 11 on a scorecard.
Oh yeah, it was Austin Johnson, and this was the first year that I took a team to state tournament. We were in regional tournament, and he started the second day shooting 4 pars and then a 9 and an 11. And I said, okay, you know, he's obviously not going to be one of the 4 scores that we count. And so I gave him a little pep talk about, you know, playing like a gentleman out there and not, you know, falling apart. And the great thing about it was that Austin was a fiery kid. He was a kid who was, you know, played really, really hard and took things hard. And for him to keep his composure, I thought was pretty doggone impressive. Anyways, I left him alone the rest of the round because I figured he's not going to count. And he was a senior, so he's on the 18th hole. So I said, I'll walk in with Austin. So I went out and met him, and I said, how'd you do, buddy? And he said, I hung in there all right, coach. So I looked at his card. He had 4 pars, a 9 and 11, and then ran 12 straight pars. He had 16 pars. He shot an 83, and we counted his score as the 4th score and went to states by 1 shot.
I mean, that's incredible.
That was I said, you know, I told Austin, I said, Austin, every team that I coach from now on is going to get tired of hearing this story.
Eli actually sent me a text message. He sent me one that you should bring up. So I don't know. I don't know the backstory in this whatsoever, but he said, ask him about John Chen shooting 119. And then what did he, what he did the following day?
So John was, great kid, went to UVA, very smart kid. He could hit a golf ball. So we're at a tournament in August, and John comes over to me and says, "Coach, I cannot hit the ball. I cannot hit the ball. Could you put somebody in for me?" I said, "John, does this look like a basketball game? I don't have a bench over here. You're in." He said, "Just hang in there and do your best." Well, he wasn't lying. He couldn't hit a golf ball to save his life. He shot 119. I don't know how he didn't run out of golf balls. So a week later, he shoots. The next match we have, we're at Twin Lakes. He shoots a 76.
Wow. It's a 43 shot improvement. I mean,
now the 119 was an anomaly. Sure. I mean, he was a decent player. He could definitely, but I don't know where that he wasn't lying. He said he couldn't hit the ball. I thought Eli was when you said John, I thought it was going to be John Schindler. So John was a really good player. He actually won the men's club championship at Trump National. But John was very, a pretty intense golfer. And we're at a tournament at Independence, and Eli, and I can't remember who else it was, Eli and one of the, maybe it was Kenny Littman, but they're over there kind of giving him, they're kind of razzing him or a little, or they're giving him a hard time. And I call Eli over and says, "Eli, you do understand this is a team sport and that his score is going to count for us." And Eli, as smart as Eli was, it kind of dawned on him that maybe he shouldn't be messing with John. It's like, "Yeah, you're right, coach. He's on our team." Yeah, it was funny.
That's funny. All right, I got one more he said to bring up. And again, I don't know. I have no idea what this means. But he said, "Brandon Berry eating Johnny Rockets hamburger at state championship."
The first year that we won in this streak that we are in right now.
Okay.
So we're in Richmond. We're playing at Magnolia, and Johnny Rockets has this hamburger place up the road there. So we played the first day, and we're up. And Brandon, who was our key player, he was our number one player, went to Johnny Rockets and had a cheeseburger with an egg on top. I swear I'd never seen a kid look so ill that night. And I told him, I said, thank goodness his mom was there, because if his mom had not been there, I wouldn't have let him play. I would have taken him to the emergency room. But she said, "It's just a stomach thing, coach. He's good to go." I said, "Okay." That kid was so sick, and he shot a decent round for us, but he couldn't even take water in. I'd never seen anybody who was so ill be able to play as well as he did. And like I said, thank goodness his mom was there, because if his mom hadn't been there, I would have not let him play.
And you guys ended up winning. You said that was your first year run.
We won, yeah.
Another thing I kind of noticed that was interesting about your current team is you got a lot of ladies on your team and in your top six.
Yeah, that's been a change the last couple of years for us. We've always had some real good young lady golfers. We had Bridget Baker won our had a really great career for us, and I still remember one of the best finishes ever in high school golf. So Bridget was in the girls state championship. I think she was in 10th place after the first day, came back, got into a playoff. Her last shot in high school was a 20-foot birdie putt on a playoff hole to win the girls' state championship.
Oh, wow.
And that was as good an ending as you could have for a career.
Oh, my God.
So Bridget was a real – but anyways, yeah, I've always had a good girl here or there, but the last couple of years I've had, a good part of our team has been the contributions of the girls. Alina won state championship last year. She birdied three out of the last four holes, shot 60, and really was so instrumental in us winning the state championship last year.
And she's back on your team this year.
At districts, she won her individual yesterday, and Catherine finished second. So the top two finishes in the tournament were two of our girls.
And is Alina the one you said is going on to play at North Carolina?
Alina's going to Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So this is your last year. Obviously, you got a few more weeks here of trying to get one more in the trophy case. You know, are you gonna miss it?
Oh, I'll miss it a ton. Like I said, it's just I'm enthusiastic as I was the first year. I love doing it. The kids are great. 95 is worse. The girls golf coach, the club, we have a club team for the girls who aren't quite good enough to make it on the co-ed team. Yeah. He's an excellent golfer and very, very motivated. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's hard to find people that schedule-wise can take the job.
Sure.
So I didn't want to take a chance on losing the opportunity for them to have a good replacement for me. I'd like to see the program keep going well. I tell you one little funny story that I always love.
Please.
So we're at River Bend, and there had been some rain, and we played the match. And the next day we had another match at River Bend. So I had my captain out there on the first tee with their captain and all the players. And I turned to John Young, who was my captain. And I said, John, you played yesterday. I know the fairways are a little soft. Should we play lift clean in place? And John says, I don't know, coach. I said, John, it's not a simple, not a complicated question here. You played yesterday. I don't know, coach. I said, John. And he says, coach, I never hit a fairway. I don't know what they're like. I started laughing so hard. All right, John, you got me there.
And Riverbend, I mean, that's one of your home courses, right?
Yes, it is. Riverbend's been really good to us. The members there. Well, I think out of the last five club champions, four of them have been our boys who have gone on to become members there. So
is that right?
We have real close ties with Riverbend, and some of our best players have been members from Riverbend. So it's a great golf course and a great and like I said, the members there have been fantastic. You know, I had one yesterday. This is another one of my pet peeves. The kids are on the fringe of the green. I mean, they're on the fringe, and they'll take a 60 degree wedge to hit that shot. So I had a kid do that yesterday. So I call him over and I said, what did you use there? And he said, a 60. I know that was wrong, coach. And I said, well, why did you do it then? He was like, why? So he says, and this is so typical of these kids. They don't hit a bump and run. They flop the ball even from little short distances. And it's one thing that I really, real pet peeve, because I know when they get to college, that's not going to fly at all. Excuse me. Another kid who went to the University of Michigan, very smart kid. Michigan or Michigan State, I can't remember which one it was. A year later, he's at UVA. He said, this is a straight A student, brilliant student. So I said, what happened at Michigan State? Didn't you like the school? He says, oh, the school was great. I didn't realize it was so cold there. I said,
having a little research.
Anyways, no, I just, the kids make me smile, and they're fun. And they work hard at, I think, is the most frustrating game that's ever been invented. And knowing how to deal with the frustration of golf is a big part of becoming successful. And you got to, and if you're not a little stubborn, you're going to quit because the game is so frustrating. It's a testament to their desire to really to be excellent at something. And considering the academic loads that these kids carry, I know it's so much more than I had in my day. So much more than I had in my day. The AP classes that they take and how they're able to schedule-wise to keep the game going. But it's been a really gratifying experience. And I don't think it's going to hit me until probably next August. That just won't hit me that I'm not doing it anymore. Right now, it's just the theory. It's theoretical.
Yeah. Well, you're only a 2 to 3 hour drive up I-95 away from the team. You know, let's come visit.
Oh no, I'll be around and watching them, especially the kids that are on the team and coming back.
Do you have a relationship? I mean, 27 years, do you have a lot of players coming back? Have you stayed in touch with a lot of your players?
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah, for sure. I got players from the first year I coach who will email me after a state championship. So yeah, we keep in touch, and I've been to weddings of players that I've had, you know. Some of them have kids now, which makes me feel like, oh my gosh, this is really something. I've maintained some good friendships from parents the families of these kids. I think they look back on it as a really fun experience that they've had. And I said, look, I says, you, it's hard for you to appreciate, but when you come back for your class reunion and you go into the gym there and you see state championship banners up there all over for golf, it'll be a great reminder of what guys were able to accomplish. And 7 in a row is an all-time record. And Virginia golf has been around for like 75 years. So, you know, that's an all-time record. Nobody's touched that. So
I don't imagine they will anytime soon either.
Well, let's see. We'll see. But like I said, if somebody asked me yesterday, I said, look, if we play our best and somebody beats us, my hat's off to them. Robinson will give us a real fight this year.
Yeah, Robinson's that's one of your biggest competitors, your best team.
Yeah, I think so. Robinson's very good. They're a little bit deeper than they used to be. They've always had some really good players, but they haven't been quite deep enough. So this year, I think if I had to pick our biggest threat to the streak is going to be Robinson, for sure.
I'm sure there's tons of other stories we could bring up. It sounds like you've got, even just looking at all Met teams, you've got a litany of players that have gone on to the next level and some incredible teams. I think your run has been incredibly impressive. I want to congratulate you on your run of state championships and wish you nothing but the best over the next few weeks and this run.
I appreciate it, but I always tell people I feel like I've been handed the keys to a Ferrari. My goal was not to mess it up.
We'll end it there. Congratulations again. Thank you very much for sharing some of your stories and a heck of a career.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
I don't have a good golf game, but I don't really care. I'm a regular dude living in D.C., and I want to know about D.C.-centric golf stuff. If you can tell me something that I don't already know, then that is great for me. I don't want the regular stuff. I want exciting stuff. I want different stuff. I want stuff I can't hear elsewhere. But I want it to be about DC golf.